You can meet and hear Anthony Esselin, John Warwick Montgomery, Ryan Anderson, Bev Yonke, Mark Kaltoff, and Chris Rosebro at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Registration is $120. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Issuesetc.org.
It's turned into a club with which to beat up the people that they blame the most for giving them Donald Trump.
We need to have these power seekers using their ambition against other power seekers' ambition as they protect their own turf. And this is what makes our government a self-limiting government.
Jesus is the one who fulfills the law for us. He's the one who feared and loved and trusted in his Father above all things.
Central Texas welder fabricators love to turn and burn while listening to Issues, Etc.
I grew up in Texas, in Dallas, and surrounded by, well, we considered them to be political allies in some sense. Blue Dog Democrats, we tended to agree with them. We kind of traditional Republicans, I was a Republican at the time, agreed with them on a lot of social and moral issues, and that was very nice to have those allies there. Now when I hear the term Blue Dog Democrat, I'm not sure if it is describing what I grew up surrounded by or not. It seems to have changed the definition of Blue Dog Democrat, and it does raise the bigger issue of what role religion and religious values are going to play in the short term here, the midterm elections that are coming up within a week or so. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Thursday afternoon, October the 25th. We're going to be talking with Terry Mattingly about the media, Blue Dog Democrats, and religion in the midterm elections. A little bit later, Pastor Hisham Shahab is going to join us. We'll continue Reformation Week, Paths to Lutheranism. Today, the path to Lutheranism from Islam, in fact, from the Muslim Brotherhood. Feel free to join us with questions or comments, or call in number 1-877-623-MYIE. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about the media, Blue Dog Democrats, and religion in the midterm elections, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
I grew up understanding Blue Dog Democrat to be kind of the negative image or the mirror image of Country Club Republican. Country Club Republicans typically fiscally conservative, morally and socially liberal, libertine, in fact, in some cases. And the its mirror image in the Blue Dog Democrat would have been someone who was fiscally more liberal, but morally and socially more conservative. Does that definition still hold?
Yeah, I think that's pretty good. Another way to look at it is you have to look back at the old Democratic South, back before Republicans really had much clout in the region at all. And since I'm older than you, I can vaguely remember some of those structures being in place. And I grew up in Texas as well and spent my childhood on the edge of West Texas, which is kind of like the area where free-range Blue Dogs would live. I think the distinction there really begins to get strained with Roe v. Wade. That shouldn't be a surprise to anyone who knows anything about American politics. But the term that you heard a lot in Texas when I was growing up was that these people were populists. That was the term. And also that they were kind of leftovers from the New Deal. So you had people that tended to be kind of pro-government, kind of economically progressive. These were the people, frankly, that in the Senate or in the House would hang out a lot with a Lyndon Baines Johnson. And they were very, very important people when it came to building coalitions in Washington, D.C., because to put together a progressive coalition on some sort of economic matter or some sort of social matter, you knew that you had to win the conservative Democrats to be able to pull that off. And the tensions between conservative Democrats and liberal Democrats burst into full flame, visible for the world to see at the Democratic Convention of, I believe it was 1968 in Chicago, the famous Mayor Daley convention. Meanwhile, on the Republican side, you have had all kinds of funeral hymns sung in recent years for the death of the progressive or moderate Republican. And for the most part, moderate Republicans are exactly how you describe them, kind of leave-us-alone moral libertarians who still were with the business class in terms of their alliances within the Republican Party. But right here is a crucial point that we've all been talking about more in recent years. Think back 10, 20 years. The minute you said American business and the business class, you immediately thought to some degree of conservatism, or conservative forces, big business, corporations, etc., were considered conservative. Do you have that same image when you talk about corporations today?
Oh, no, no, no.
In our digital economy?
Not at all.
I mean, the perfect example right now is the competition to see who gets the Amazon.com, the big, new, massive Amazon.com headquarters. And we've written about this at Get Religion. There are a few newspapers, news organizations, who have begun to realize that if you're going to land the Amazon.com headquarters, you're going to have to show a willingness to be morally and socially progressive, especially on issues related to the environment and to gay rights issues, if you hope to land Amazon. The one possible exception to this is the exception that almost proves the rule, which is the possibility that Amazon could end up in Austin, Texas, which, as any Texan knows, is commonly referred to as the People's Republic of Austin. And Austin is the city where Texans live if they don't want to live in Texas, kind of the official blue zip code surrounded by a sea of red. So you could make a case that some people at Amazon might want to go to Austin as a way of maybe helping tip the state of Texas from red to at least purple, to at least some sort of neutral status, and that if they have billions and billions and billions of dollars to throw around, that might even get the attention of some mainstream Texas politicians, you know, in both parties. But the key here is economic issues versus social issues. And beginning with Bill and Hillary Clinton and what some people call Clintonian triangulation, that sounds like a weather term or something like that. But the whole idea was that Bill Clinton became a master of taking symbolic conservative gestures that reached out to Southern voters and Midwestern voters while not actually disturbing people related to abortion. And you remember that Bill Clinton and Al Gore, both of them early in their career, were kind of the rising stars of the Blue Dog world.
They were Blue Dog Democrats. They were the poster boys for it.
Well, they were the next. They were Blue Dogs, the next generation. I mean, and in terms of Arkansas and Tennessee, both of them had records that were almost pro-life. I believe throughout the House of Representatives years and early in his Senate years, I believe Al Gore's voting record with National Right to Life was sometime as high as 80 or 85%. Bill Clinton in Arkansas signed legislation that basically defined the right to life beginning with conception. Legislation that some people have said, if that had ever been approved by the court, would obviously overturn Roe v. Wade. So here's the point. Both men acted like Blue Dog Democrats until they needed to go national within the Democratic Party. And that's what brings us to the midterms. In 2018, you had this very real possibility, still do, that the Democrats might take the House of Representatives. And I think most people now don't think they have a chance to take the Senate. And in large part, that's because they didn't run candidates for the Senate who were conservative enough to actually have a chance. So the Democrats have kind of been tested on their loyalty to a pure left-wing economic and social moral agenda. They were tested by the temptation of actually trying to capture the House and Senate, which means they might have to tolerate some blue dogs or some people who weren't just blue dogs, but specifically were that old West Texas blue dog combination, which was economic populism, progressive, and then morally conservative stands on issues like abortion, religious liberty, gay rights, etc. Meanwhile, that exact combination, except even in a more extreme economic progressive form, was what you saw with the Catholic Democrats, which is not quite the same as the Blue Dog, although they would get along on some coalitions. You used to have quite a few progressive Catholics who were still pro-life, of which Dick Gephardt would have been kind of the poster boy for that crowd. So Blue Dogs and pro-life Catholic Democrats are not exactly the same group of people, but there's some, you know, but there's a lot of overlap there. And now those are both endangered species in terms of whether the Democratic Party will even allow them to run for office at the level of the Senate in particular, but maybe even the House.
When we come back with Terry Mattingly, we're going to talk about a New York Times feature talking about a U.S. Senate race in Tennessee that Terry says contained exactly zero information about the role of moral and cultural issues in the race, but used the term blue dog. We'll be right back.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Church music directors can find a new community at Prelude to Postlude, the CPH music blog. Learn helpful tips for managing music ministry and involving members, and meet the composers of some of your favorite new pieces. Plus, find suggestions of music to use for special services, and preview some of our newest works with free samples you can use at your church. Visit us at preludetopostlude.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore, thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
For to us a child is born, to us a son is given. This child, Jesus Christ, is the focus of every Christmas card that Emmanuel Press offers. Whether in stained glass, illumination, or classic works of art, Christmas cards from Emmanuel Press joyfully confess our Savior's birth with the words of Scripture and the poetry of hymns. Visit their website at emmanuelpress.us to create a custom assortment of cards. emmanuelpress.us.
We are now a mere 15 days away from the premier conference for Christian laity, the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Dallas, Texas. Speakers include Anthony Esselin, Ryan Anderson, John Warwick Montgomery, Beverly Yonke, Mark Kultoff, and Chris Rosebro. Registration is $120. That includes three meals. And thanks to Wittenberg Academy, childcare is absolutely free. You can find out more and you can register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas. We're talking about the media, Blue Dog Democrats, and religion in the midterms. Terry Mattingly is our guest. Terry, you have written recently about a New York Times feature that was talking about a U.S. Senate race in Tennessee, used the term Blue Dog, but made, as far as you could tell, absolutely no mention of social or moral issues in the race.
Well, the quote was not actually from the New York Times. It was from a kind of an expert on Tennessee politics, who referred to the fact that the state of Tennessee was kind of evolving out of a semi-blue dog era where there was kind of like there was a potential for blue dog Democrats in the state. And this man said Tennessee is now evolving into a pure one-state system, one-party system, which, referring to the Republicans virtually taking it over. And the question there is, to what degree did the Blue Dogs die a natural death? In other words, did Blue Dogs, who ran as populists but with a tinge of moral conservatism, did those Blue Dogs die off, or were they murdered? Were they chosen for natural extinction? I'm going to get a Darwinian term in there. Because stop and think about it. If you have a very socially conservative state, and you wanted to elect Democrats, wouldn't you want a Democrat who was as acceptable as possible to morally conservative Republicans? What was that figure in that amazing study that came out from Christianity Today and Lifeway the other day that said 75% of pro-life Republicans said they would be willing to vote for a pro-life Democrat if the Republican Party did not offer a specifically better option? That's a, you know, in some old Bible Belt states and Midwestern state, that's a tremendous potential shift. I mean, if the Republicans come out with a candidate who's kind of wishy-washy on moral and social issues, maybe in the name of big business or corporate life, and you have a Democrat who's an economic progressive, and a progressive on immigration and racial issues and whatever, but meanwhile is a strong evangelical or Catholic on moral and social issues, you're going to hold on to the African-American and Latino vote with that candidate, and at the same time, you've got a real potential for some crossover out of evangelical and Catholic world. And remember, especially in the Midwest, the biggest swing vote of all is always Catholics, especially church-going Catholics. So in Tennessee, I thought it was fascinating. I mean, this is my home state. I understand the differences between the three states of Tennessee, which roughly can be called Memphis, Nashville, and the Mountains. The Mountains are very old guard Republican. I mean, the Mountains of Tennessee were Republican during the Civil War. They didn't back the Confederacy. That's old Republican when Lincoln is one of your heroes. But they're still very morally conservative. So you have one candidate, I forget which Senate candidate it was, years ago when he was reelected and he got up to do his victory speech, he said, "I have looked unto the hills from which cometh my help." Now that was a subtle, not so subtle reference to the East Tennessee Mountains. was exactly what he was saying. He said, you know, the Republicans and the conservative Republicans of East Tennessee turned out. But what if you could run a Democrat who might pull you votes in East Tennessee and then might also keep solid the African-American votes of Memphis and West Tennessee? Don't you think that guy would, or woman would, give you a pretty strong chance of victory?
It's a winning strategy, if you ask me. Let's broaden it out a little bit here, Terry, and just ask, kind of in the few minutes left to us, what do you think the media is missing going into the midterms with respect to religion issues?
Yep. Okay. Tennessee is a great example. The other one that you're beginning to see some coverage of is Indiana, the Joe Donnelly versus Mike Braun race. And this might be the last stand for Democrats right of center, although the guy in Tennessee, the former governor, Bredesen, is someone who is kind of conservative on economics. He's definitely very, very conservative in terms of bowing down to corporate interests. But in terms of his moral and social issues, especially on religious liberty, the press isn't asking anything. And in large part, I think this is because a fairly liberal newspaper chain controls most news in the state of Tennessee now, controlling the newspapers in Memphis, Jackson, Nashville, and Knoxville. So we're not getting the moral and social questions asked in Tennessee that a lot of readers want to see answered. Now, up in Indiana, which is another crucial state, if you're watching the fight for control of the Senate, you have an openly pro-life Democrat running as a pro-life Democrat, running as a social conservative. And if Joe Donnelly loses in Indiana, I don't know when we're going to see a conservative Democrat get to run again, a culturally conservative Democrat, someone who is the opposite of the Clintonian equation of, like, pro-corporate, almost anti-labor economics mixed with moral libertarianism in Clinton, Bill Clinton's private life as well as his public persona. So look for those races. Look on election night for all of the heroes of the new super culturally liberal kind of tribal Democratic Party. See how they do. See how close the race is in Texas, although I don't think it's going to be very close now. But keep your eye on Indiana and Tennessee, because we're going to learn a lot about the role of religion in American politics in those two states. And remember one other thing. Long, long ago, or meaning a decade or so, when the Pew Forum data came out on the religion and politics of the nuns, John C. Green of Akron made a very prophetic statement, which he said, in the future, the anti-religious and the strongly secular element of the Democratic Party was going to be as large and as powerful as the traditional religious component is in the Republican Party. Well, will those young, fiercely secular voters turn out? And will that be a winning equation for the Democrats as well? Eventually, we're going to also have to see if that virulent kind of Jacobin secularism, we're going to have to see how well that plays with African-American Christians and Latino Catholics as well.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and of the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, Pastor Hisham Shahab is going to join us. It's Issues Etc. Reformation Week. We've been talking about paths to Lutheranism. Pastor Shahab's is certainly interesting, a path not only from Islam, but from the Muslim Brotherhood in Lebanon. We'll be right back.
October is Pastor Appreciation Month, and to mark the occasion, the Lutheran Witness is tackling ministry and mental health.
Some articles focus on life in the ministry, others deal with emotional wellness generally, still others, including what are perhaps the most powerful pieces of writing in this power-packed issue, grapple with the complicated and often thorny relationship between the two. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans in their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
We Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, coordinator for stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship. lcms.org/stewardship.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.